Hi, I'm Bob Wells, and I'd like to welcome you to the Get Real Show, sponsored by Keystone Partners Group, the show that strips away the myth and the mystery behind success in the real estate industry. Today, I have the special privilege of having a guest by the name of Dan Parrish. Dan is the number one agent, a commercial agent in the Pocono area for the last 12 years. Really excited to have him with us today. Dan?
Bob, good to see you.
Thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
You're a busy guy. I really appreciate the fact you take time to be on the show.
Sure, no problem.
So tell me about commercial real estate and kind of what your business looks like right now.
Well, commercial real estate right now it's bustling. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on. Changes in tax laws, changes in financing. Financing being very attainable these days with very cheap money.
Sure.
We're finding a lot of interest in anything with cash flow businesses, cash flow properties, and they could be as simple as a duplex that mm-hmm. brings in 10 or 12 grand a year, or as complex as I'm doing a few large malls right now where net incomes are upwards of $400,000 or $500,000 a year.
Hmm. So things are moving on the high end.
Absolutely. Hmm. The high end is where most of the action is right now, and I'm happy to say that.
It's exciting. Now, do you have a specific vertical that you work in that you focus in, or are you kind of a more generalized agent?
We're in the Pocono, so it's a small market. Hmm. I mean, I wish I was in Philadelphia or New York City, where I could specialize in either industrial or investment or retail. Mm-hmm. But in the Poconos, you have to do it all.
Right.
Although I have a very large team that we're kind of segregating those things out. My specialty would be more of the cash flow properties, more of the investment analysis. And for some reason, I've been really good at selling gas stations, mm-hmm. which are always a couple million bucks. But I've learned the intricacies of gas stations, and I've learned to how to market them right and to sell them. So that's been a good market for me too.
Cool. So what does your team look like at this point?
We just brought on a sixth member to the team. Mm-hmm. So I've got a mixture of a real young guy who's 21 years old, just learned the business. Mm. And the person we just brought on has been a commercial real estate appraiser for 24 or 5 years. So he's got a lot of experience in commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. And then mixed in between are some people that have been in the business world or been in investments or know some cash flow, and we're trying to teach them the ropes as it goes along. And for me, I generate a lot of business by myself, and I'm too busy to take it on.
Yeah.
So I try to send it down the line and let them get some experience and some success and money.
Okay. Now, are there administrators on that team as well?
We have a team administrator who's also our assistant. She is fabulously qualified and unbelievably talented, which is what you need to keep you going. And in fact, at this point, we almost need a second one because of how much business we do. But she Sure. takes on everything from marketing to our website to budgeting, and also to checking our paperwork and making sure that it's meets the real estate commission and
Sure.
and our local association.
So that's one administrator and five licensed agents, or six?
One plus five.
Okay, one plus five. Right. And okay, great. And what type of annual sales volume are you expecting in 2016? Do you have a goal on that?
2016, we set a goal for the team of $25 million, mm-hmm. which doesn't sound like a lot, but in the Poconos, again,
it's
a small market.
Yeah.
And when I was with a broker firm, mm-hmm. and I used to sell between 8 and 10 million myself. So I set a personal goal a little bit higher than that, but our team was 25 million, and what we have under contract and closed as of right now would put us at around 21.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh, wow.
We still have a few more months to get another 4 million under contract.
Yeah, I think you'll do that.
And we'll hit it.
Yeah, no doubt. So how long have you been in real estate? When did you start?
I got my license in 1998. Mm-hmm. I was a school teacher at the time. I had 9 years of school teaching, coaching basketball in Pocono Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make more money, make money for my effort.
Sure.
And of course, as a school teacher, you can work your butt off.
Yeah.
But you get paid the same as the next guy who's sitting in the next room that's reading the newspaper.
Right.
So
yeah.
I wanted to get paid for my effort, and I saw real estate as an avenue to do that. And commercial real estate always intrigued me because it's business, it's numbers, it's not gray, it's black and white, it's not emotional, which
right.
I really loved about it. And I got my license in 98, and in 99 I quit teaching and just dove right into it.
So you dove into commercial straight away, and what was your first year look? What was that like?
Terrible. I got pretty much chucked to the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've always done everywhere I've gone is I look at the most successful people and say, well, what are they doing?
Yeah.
And how are they doing it? And okay, I have to mimic that because they know what they're doing. They've gotten to where I want to be.
Sure.
And so I started taking classes and, you know, just really studying the craft instead of just trying to throw stuff on the wall, like some people say.
Right.
And by 2004, I was making what my broker at that time called rock star money.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Now, in 1998, what are some of the things that you were doing that, that weren't working? That you could say,
everything.
Wow, that was a bad idea.
Absolutely everything. I had very little experience in commercial real estate. I had very little experience in negotiating.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I had going for me was I knew how to talk on the phone. I was educated, and that's about where it stopped. And I mean, I keep a list, and I look back on it sometimes and say, you know what? I should have made a lot of money that first year, and I had no idea what I was doing.
If you could kind of wind back the clock
and
change a couple of things during that first year that you would have done differently to make the biggest difference in your result, what would it be? Any thoughts?
It would have, if I would have had more experience, like when I look at some of these deals that I lost when I was, you know, back in 98, 99, when I was just brand new, if I would have asked one question or done one thing differently, I'd have saved this $500,000 deal, this $300,000 deal. And for a guy, you know, teaching, making $35,000, if I'd have said one question right, I'd have made $35,000.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and there's probably a dozen deals that I look back on all the time and say, well, that's, you know, that's the price of experience. But which is why now that we have this team, some of the people that are less experienced, I want to prevent those things from happening.
Right. They have you.
They have me to go to. Right.
Right. So in 98, when you started, if you was collaboration probably the missing piece? Maybe the ability to bounce things from someone who had a lot more experience?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I joined a brokerage firm, and under the auspices that the broker was going to train me. So I'm a school teacher, so I have all summer off.
Sure.
So the plan was, listen, my school ends at, I don't know, June 12th. June 13th, I'm coming in.
Mm-hmm.
We're going whole hog for 3 months, and I'm going to get experienced.
Right.
My broker at that time decided, and good for him, decided to take a trip around the United States with his family.
Right.
He could afford
good
to.
Good timing.
It was good for him. So
school's out.
Right. School's out. His kids get out of school. He's gone. And part of the plan, the deal he made with his wife was, I'm not going to call into the office.
Right.
Not that he would have been able to train me over the phone anyway.
Sure.
Like I said, I got chucked to the wolves. And had I had some better people to guide me and train me and to show me what I was doing wrong, I would have been a lot better off.
Yeah. So as you started to think, wow, I need to get kind of trained up here, what options were out there and what did you decide to follow? How did you get the knowledge you have today?
Well, what I did was I looked at those guys that were most successful and I asked myself, well, what are they doing that I'm not doing? And most of it was education. It was just learning commercial real estate. And so I began taking the CCIM courses, Certified Commercial Investment Member. It's considered to be the PhD of commercial real estate.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. It's hard. You got to travel around the country. You got to spend a lot of money. And the education is rigorous. It's mind-bending.
Yeah.
And after you take the courses and you have a $10 million resume, they allow you to sit for a 7.5-hour exam. And you have to pass that to get what they call the PIN.
Right.
So it took me 3.5, almost 4 years to get all the courses done, to get the resume right, and then to sit for a 7-hour exam in Washington, D.C., and then to pass it. But what it gave me was a lot of experience and knowledge, and then it gave me the confidence. And, of course, now I've also got 4 or 5 years of getting my you-know-what handed to me on the market. Okay, don't do this, do this.
Yeah.
And then I started taking broker courses, too.
Okay.
And I also took some courses that taught me how to better communicate and to negotiate. So, you know, at around 2004 and the market was turning, I now had the combination of, I had the education, I had some training, and I had some experience, and now I was dangerous.
Yeah, in a good way.
Right.
So when you took some training in communications and things like that, what kind of training was that? Was that inside the real estate world or was that outside the real estate world?
I was inside the real estate world.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that a kind of an official thing? Tell me about that.
I'm trying to remember who it was. I think through the CCIM, coursework, and there was another a program you could take, and it was very simple. It was like a 2-day thing, and it was like negotiating for professionals or whatever it was. But it was geared toward real estate. So, again, I had to travel, and I had sat down with a bunch of other people around the country, and you know, they went over some techniques. How would you handle this situation? How would you handle that situation? And then they had a guy that really knew what he was doing. And he sat there with you and he said, okay, let's role play. You're the buyer or you're the seller and throw out the worst case scenario you've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I started telling him about deals that blew apart. And then like in 5 minutes, he had me closed. I'm like, how did he do that?
Yeah.
And it was very simple. And then they teach you the very simple techniques to just not be over communicative. Just, hey, listen, talk to the buyers, talk to the sellers, find out what they want. You know,
sure.
This is not about selling something and getting a commission. It's about realizing their goals. Because if you help them realize their goals, whether buyers or sellers, they're going to tell their people that. They're going to come back to you. And guess what? That's why today I don't take any leads today. I don't take one because I'm so busy with people that are calling me that I've done business with before because I've treated them correctly and we've established, what are your goals? Can we accomplish those goals? And then we make a plan to get those goals. In some cases, I can give you some examples where sellers wanted a certain number. And one's a restaurant owner is a great example. Then I sat down with them and said, listen, in 24 years of your tax returns, you're showing me a negative. I need you to, for 2 years, to show me what you're really making.
Yeah.
And then I can get you this number. And so they bit the bullet and they did. And guess what? 3 weeks after they got their tax return back, I had their restaurant under contract for what they wanted. So it's not, you know, some agents would just been said, okay, well, what do you want? Let me list it. And they wouldn't have taken, you know, the buyer or seller's goals in mind to try to achieve them.
Yeah, and they pay for that later in lost business from a
lost
referral
time,
standpoint or repeat business. So what else do you do to ensure that you get that business again? I mean, obviously, you're giving them huge value in the process. You communicate with those people after the fact. Do you stay in touch? How do you do that?
Yeah, we try to stay in touch with everybody. And of course, technology today is wonderful because you can do all kinds of email things and stay in touch via email or, you know, sending them a Christmas card or whatever it is. Just kind of stay in touch with them. Now, again, Pocono is a very small market, so most of these people I see on the street, or I'll see in the supermarket, you see them at the bank, you know, and hey, how you doing, how you been, and so it's not hard to stay in touch with them. Obviously, if we were in a much larger market, you would have to exploit some of those avenues of social media or email and things. Just stay in front of people, because if you stay in front of them, they're going to use you.
Yeah. You know, I guess anybody in whether it's commercial or residential, has to take what their market gives them, and they have to model what they do around that market, right?
Absolutely.
So is there anything else that you do differently in a small market, maybe, that you might not do in a bigger market or vice versa?
That's a good question. I don't know. We try to have a good presence in the community, like, you know, whether it's Christmas time or some other, you know, special times of the year. We try to do things in the community, within the community, you know, whether donating to the Salvation Army or to a food bank or try to share some of the wealth. You know, and it, in a small community, that says a lot and it goes a long way. And we like doing it, but it also is in a small community, you know, that word gets around.
It works.
And it works.
Yeah.
It makes you feel good, too. Last year we did, you know, we were just getting off the ground and stuff like that, but we did a huge donation to the Salvation Army. Went into the Salvation Army like 2 weeks before they were doing their give out. And we said, well, what are you short on? Well, we could use this, this, and this. We went to Target and bought them out of, I think, everything in that category. We had three shopping carts full of stuff.
Empty Target.
That they needed. And, you know, it felt good to do that.
So tell me about your growth. After you start to educate yourself, at what point did you say, wow, I don't know if I could do this by myself. I might need some help here. How long was it from the day that you started?
It didn't take long. After 2004, when I started making that rock star money, then I realized I need some help.
Yeah.
And so I ended up hiring an assistant at that time, and I was able to steal a woman that had 18 years as a paralegal in a New Jersey law firm.
Wow.
And she was very, very sharp. And she was commuting from the Poconos. She just wanted to stop driving so far. So I got lucky.
Yeah.
And she was with me for 5 or 6 years before she retired with her husband and moved to Florida.
Okay.
But she was wonderful. She took care of all the paperwork so that I could be out on the street, you know, talking to people. Working deals, finding new deals, and it was, you know, an assistant's supposed to increase your volume and your production by 25%. I think a good assistant increases it by 50%.
Yeah,
because that's what I found.
Yeah, sure. Now, when she left you after 5 years, was there a quick replacement for her?
Unfortunately, you know, that was also about the time when the market, you know, kind of went upside down. So 08, 09 is kind of when the commercial market kind of tipped upside down. It took a few years after the residential market did so. And so she was moving to Florida and everything else. And I didn't really need an assistant
right
for a few years there. So, but then we, you know, I had this thought of striking out on my own, and there was another girl that had worked for us before and had learned from my former assistant. Mm-hmm. But she was working somewhere else, so we were able to steal her
right
and bring her up, and she's been with us ever since.
Okay. So you were with a kind of a very traditional brokerage.
Yes.
During what time period?
I was basically with that broker from 98 through 2014.
Okay. And you joined Keystone Partners Group 2014. When you first came into commercial real estate, mm-hmm. What did your checklist look like for a company? I mean, back in the late 90s, you were saying, okay, I'm looking to get into real estate. Here's what I'm looking for in a company. How did you make that decision? And did
when
it play out right?
When I first got in?
Yeah, when you first got in.
It was...
First real estate.
Who would take my license?
Whoever. Did you interview?
No.
Yeah.
That was really it. I had met, you know, the gentleman I worked for, and I that's where I'm going.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like that. I didn't shop around. I had no clue how... any of the models worked or anything. I just knew, well, here's a guy that's going to help me out. He's making really good money. I want some of that.
Which seems to be very, very common in the real estate industry where it's a relationship in many cases. Mm-hmm. You know, we know somebody and we say, well, that's the relationship I have. That's where I'm going to go and make the best of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were there for a long time, 16 years.
16 years. Right?
And then you decided to shift gears. And what was the checklist like in 2014? Was it different than in 1998? What were you looking for then? What was important to you as a business person?
Well, after, you know, and I researched a bunch of models as I went on, I realized, hey, this broker model is archaic.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for the broker.
Yeah.
But it's kind of archaic. Mm-hmm. And so I had watched other companies. And in the Poconos, we didn't have any commercial... I would say
the big
national
names.
Companies.
Yeah.
Like nobody, it was too small for Cushman and Wakefield to come or the bigger guys to come.
Yeah.
So I always said, well, one of these days, one of them's coming,
mm-hmm, sure.
You know, and they're going to just blow us away because we're, mm-hmm. we're this small boutique firm, very, very well known.
Mm-hmm.
But when a bigger guy comes along, we're going to get squashed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd also seen other models where, hey, the way that the financial model is set up is different. And so it doesn't take long for a guy to say, hey, I'm bringing nearly $500,000 a year in gross commissions into the house.
Yeah.
But I'm taking less than half of that home.
Right.
So is there a better model for me?
Sure, yeah.
And you do that for 8-10 years and...
You start doing the math.
You start doing the math and saying, I think I could probably do better.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what I looked for then.
Right.
That's what I look for.
So it was an economic model to create a higher profitability for you.
And the other thing was, too, that when I met some of the people from Keystone Partners Group, mm-hmm. yourself included, I found out that there's no ceiling.
Right.
So you work for a broker, and you're going to bang up on that ceiling, and that's done. You're done.
Right.
Okay. In your model, okay, there's different areas where you can gain financial freedom
mm-hmm.
beyond just doing the deal and keeping more of the money.
Mm-hmm.
And that was important because, hey, if there's only one path to make money and it's got a stop sign on it, well, okay, that's easy to discern.
Yeah.
But when there's four or five paths you can take and there's no exit, it's just, it's a highway. Okay, well, I can look at any of those to make, you know, money or more, you know, financial freedom for myself.
Yeah, which I would imagine would be probably much more apparent to you than most agents because you deal with investors every day
right.
that are doing just that, right?
Right.
They're looking at multiple streams of passive income to generate
absolutely.
Financial independence.
Right.
Right. And you've got to look at both of those, the passive opportunities and the active opportunities as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts that you have about that for agents? I mean, I think that in many cases, agents sometimes make a lot of money
mm-hmm.
and they don't have a lot of money. They seem to make a lot, but they never actually start to create wealth. Is there something that you've learned over the years that you could say, wow, this is, if I wanted to actually improve the quality of my life long term, this is what I'd be doing with my income from real estate?
Yeah, being in commercial real estate gives me opportunities that maybe most other people don't see. Obviously, when an investment comes across my desk, well, I see it first.
Sure.
You know, I meet with sellers who are saying, I want to get out of this, or I've got this. I mean, there's... you know, I get a chance to see that first. Mm-hmm. But I mean, for the first thing you do is you get a good accountant.
Yeah.
And he helps you sort through the numbers. And then you kind of lay out a plan. Well, I need X dollars to live, Y dollars I should be investing, you know, Z dollars should go into other forms. Mm-hmm. And you kind of lay out that plan. That's kind of what I've done. Mm-hmm. I've layered myself with people that plan financially. Meanwhile, I fight with them sometimes and say, yes, but I don't want to buy this stock or this mutual fund. I want to buy more real estate, you know. Oh, but you should put your money in this safe, you know, haven. I'm like, well, you know, I want to put it where I want to manage it, and I can feel it and touch it and you know, impact it. So, I got a good accountant that helps steer me in the right direction. That's, mm-hmm. you know, keep me out of the tax man's pocket and things like that.
So the team of people you have around you is a big part of that. Then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So beside a CPA, anybody else on the team? Or should there be somebody else on the team?
I mean, you pick up whatever you need. Mm-hmm. You pick up whatever, and you figure out what you need to free yourself up to give you more time to do maybe the deals that you're better at doing or the ones that are more lucrative. You kind of figure that out. You know, mm-hmm. what do I need to be able to concentrate more on this or more on this? Mm-hmm.
So what do you see in future for your business? Where do you kind of think about, where did your business go from here? Are you developing your team continually? Are you starting to look for more people on the team?
Or well, you know, what we're doing or what I'm doing with the team now is more of figuring out who fits best. Mm-hmm. And they all know. I mean, I told them straight out, if you don't make $100,000 in your first year, just by your second year, mm-hmm. I have to let you go.
Right. Pretty high expectations.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's not a bad thing. It's not like, well, I don't like you thing. It's black and white. Listen, if you don't make $100,000 a year, which I think is a nice living in the Poconos, mm-hmm. this just isn't for you. It's not worth the headaches.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to try to help you get there.
Right.
So we're figuring out how to grow the team and make the team as streamlined or as strong as possible to mm-hmm. you know, service that market. But personally, I'm working in several different other areas, again, taking those other avenues to make money. I'm setting up a company right now to do kind of like a consulting firm where we work with 1031 people looking at very, very large very, very large acquisitions. We're working with a couple of very large 1031 buyers now. One guy's got $5 million, another guy's got $3 million. Mm-hmm. You know, it only takes a few of these deals a year to really make an impact.
Sure.
And that's what's very, very strong right now. So we're looking at setting that up and setting that up properly. In the meantime, we're also looking at setting up expansion teams in other markets where KPG is not right now.
Yeah.
Because commercial is, again, in commercial, we are just starting to grow and there's a lot of virgin territory. I think I'm the most northern commercial broker there is.
Yeah.
And guess what? Probably. There's a lot more north of the Poconos that we can get into. So it's a great model that I think is easy to fit into, you know, markets that you know, we do mostly secondary, tertiary markets. So, okay, I'm not going to jump in New York City, but hey, there's Williamsport, there's Corning, there's Binghamton, there's Elmira, there's Albany. We can just keep going.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think the majority of folks that we have on the show are probably 15 million, 20 million, 30 million, 40 million in volume and up. And that expansion model is something that comes up in almost every single conversation.
Absolutely.
It seems to be such a prevailing thought in the minds of agents that have been super successful and see other avenues of expanding that. Mm-hmm. Jumping back to the internals of your team, I'm curious about, I know that you've got a certain expectation of the people on your team, maybe $100,000 in GCI in the first 2 years. Any other expectations of the people on your team that make them a good fit for you long-term beside production?
I mean, I expect them to be professional. Mm-hmm. I expect them to try to grow professionally. We recommend that they take the CCIM courses or courses that will help them in their business.
Yeah, ensuring competence.
Right, because I tell them, listen, when I jumped into it, I got chucked to the wolves and I got tore apart.
Yeah.
So there's a lot with KPG, there's actually a lot of training and there's a lot of things that can help and support webinars. I mean, things they can do on their own besides, mm-hmm. hey, let's go to this conference, go to this class.
Right.
There's a lot of support there as well as just come and see me. Mm-hmm. You know, see me and run the scenario by me. Let's do a deal together, you know, and then watch how we handle this. Trying to give as much support as possible to see, hey, can they do this?
Yeah.
Can they do this?
That's a lot of support for a new person. They've got you as somebody who's been in the industry since 98. They've got a whole world of professional organizations and CCIM, for instance, and Keystone Partners Group as well. Do you think they have any expectations of you other than being able to call you and kind of bounce ideas from you? Is there anything else that they look to you for that you think that they think feels is important?
I think that they're just looking to me to be the leader, you know, and I think that they're looking to me to, when I do a huge deal and they see what's possible, you know, and I tell them, listen, I'm looking at these other guys doing $100 million deals and that's what's possible. I want some of that.
Yeah.
You know, this $5 or $10 million deal I'm doing is nice, but I'm looking at 20 or 30 million. You know, that's what I want to do in one deal.
But
they're doing, they're doing $100,000 leases or sales or selling a little duplex. You know, I think that they're just looking for the leadership and they're also looking for, hey, what's possible in this market?
Sure. Well, I think belief has such a powerful impact on all of us. I mean, when we see somebody do something that's above and beyond what we thought even was possible, right? The Olympics are going on right now. It's kind of case in point. You see people do the impossible and you say, wow, maybe I can do that too.
Right.
And when you think about personal development and kind of increasing your own belief system and you know, eliminating negative thoughts, what do you have any process for that? How do you become a better person personally?
That's a good question.
Books that you read or favorite movies, shows, seminars, anything?
You know, it probably... it's going to seem odd, but I rarely make phone calls when I'm in the car. And again, this may seem odd, but I listen to heavy metal music and it has a calming effect on me. I don't know why, but it just feels good to this, you know, to kind of rage out a little bit, I guess you'd call it.
Well, yeah. You know, well, it's curious. I think, you know, when you connect to something that, I'm looking for the words here. You know, you have a certain experience and there's music behind it. And then you play that music again. It reconnects you to that experience.
Yeah.
And if it's a positive experience and if it's a part or a time in your life where you felt empowered or you felt powerful, that music immediately brings that back. So
that's the, you know, the heart pounding part. I do spend a lot of time in the outdoors, you know, exercise and things like that, but also spend a lot of time outdoors hunting and fishing. And of course, that's my kind of Zen time. And you know, it resets me, kind of cleanses my soul a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of meditation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the question. You know, when you think about personal development, I think, you know, you have to look at spiritual development. Sometimes that means more than maybe going to church. It could mean I'm going to spend time in nature.
Right.
And I'm going to connect with that. Yeah. And that recharges you.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have any rituals during the day, things you do, exercise, things like that, that you feel kind of bring up your energy level?
Extra large Dunkin' Donuts. Am I allowed to say that?
tell me it isn't so.
that's true. I mean, I have a certain system that I kind of follow every morning. You know, I get up early. I get up at 6 or 5:30. I try to go for a walk, try to get some exercise in, you know, kind of get the blood pumping.
Yeah.
Then sit down, do a couple emails, you know, kind of set the day up and then get into the office and then just attack it.
Tell me about collaboration. Do you have any opportunity to mastermind with other commercial agents? And kind of what does that look like and what does that do for your business?
Yeah, what's nice is especially I'm working with a very large investor and I've been collaborating with a number of commercial agents from the East Coast, even around the country, which is really nice. Because again, most of these guys, the higher level guys, very, very astute, very sharp. And it's great to talk to them, bounce ideas off of them and make deals with them. You know, I'm doing probably $12 million worth of deals with this guy on four different deals, $12 million total. And three of them are with other brokers, national, you know, brokers.
Yeah.
And it's been eye-opening, you know, it's been great talking to other guys and, you know, other people that are doing really, really big things. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a great experience.
Yeah. Sometimes it's said that you're the average of the five people you spend most of your time with.
Right.
And spending time with people like that is invaluable, I would think.
Yes, it is.
Tell me about, let's get real about profitability. I mean, inside business. Like we said before, a lot of people make a lot of money production-wise, they don't invest it, but sometimes they don't even have enough left to invest.
Right.
Because they have production, but they don't have profitability inside their own business.
Right.
How have you addressed that kind of in your experience of how do you make sure that you've got money that you're actually generating as profit?
Well, there's, again, your accountant's going to help you with that. So you layer yourself with all these LLCs so that you have the tax advantages of hiding hiding all that income. And then personally, I've invested some in real estate. You know, you put some aside and some 401k or whatever, or a program for, you know, a college program for the future. And that's really been it. Insurance. I mean, there's ways to kind of spread it out.
Yeah. Do you have financials for your business?
Yes.
Okay. So you're actually watching, you have a P&L?
Yes.
So you're watching the profit. Mm-hmm. How often do you look at that stuff?
Once a month.
Okay.
We do all the QuickBooks, and then my accountant kind of goes through it all, you know, once a month. And I'm usually too busy to look at it and just say how much do I owe in quarterlies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and he says, well, you're going to need to do this, this, and this with this amount of money. Or, you know, last year it was really nice. Like, you get toward the end of the year and you're trying to balance the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to my accountant, hey, I'm looking at this new vehicle. I really, really want this vehicle. And he said, listen, you need it. Go buy it and close on it. Buy it before 2015 is over, because I can take accelerated depreciation, save you $30,000 in taxes, and, you know, all of a sudden, okay, well, I step into a new vehicle, or I'm going to refinance this investment, and I'm going to, hey, and I have more of an interest deduction. I can play with that. Or can we set some money aside and defer it into 2016 kind of thing? I mean, it's a great problem to have.
Sure.
Like, it's a great problem to have,
absolutely.
And not say, well, I need that paycheck when you can say, hey, you got $50,000 or $60,000 coming in. What can I do to protect it?
Yeah.
You know, and you just get the right experts to help you with that.
Now, was it right around 2004 when you started to say, I need the right experts? Or
2004, I said, giddy up, let's celebrate. Yeah, look at all this money.
I don't need any of these people.
And then you do a couple more years of that, and you're like, man, that's a huge check I'm writing to the government. This can't be right. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when you get an accountant, and the accountant just starts laughing at you. My accountant did. He laughed at me and was like, you're doing it all wrong.
Yeah. It's I think there's so many people when they make the shift from having a kind of a job to having their own business, they forget about the fact that it's not their money.
Right.
Part of this is the government's money, and they are coming for it. Yeah.
What was telling for me was the 1 year I had to write a check to the government, that was way more than I made my first year of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of telling, just saying, that's good, but wow, that hurts.
Did you expect that bill?
No.
Or was that kind of an unexpected, like, whoa, I didn't expect mine either.
Yeah.
The first one is a very scary one.
Yeah, and that's, you learn quick. You know, you touch the stove one time and you know it's hot.
Yeah, absolutely. So what else do you think makes the difference between you and the average commercial agent on the street that's struggling all the time? What's the difference that makes the difference for you?
It's a good question. I mean, I think all my life I've always wanted to be the best at everything I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started out when I was, I think, 7 or 8 years old, pushing a lawnmower because I got $2 to mow, you know, my grandma's lawn, and $1.50 to mow the neighbor's lawn. It was an elderly man. And then I got the next one and the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to make money. I've always wanted to be the best. And so the difference between me and other commercial agents, I think that, you know, I've taken the time to get the training and the understanding and the knowledge to help people. And I truly want to help them.
Yeah.
I realize if I help them, the money will come from it.
Right.
So some people that run in and I've heard that it could be expressed as they have commission breath.
Mm-hmm.
Is they go in and all the person hears is, I want my 5, 6, 8, 10%.
Yeah.
You know, I get in, I very rarely talk about commission. I just say, what do you want to achieve?
Mm-hmm.
And can we get there?
Right.
And I think it's different. I take time with people to understand what they're trying to accomplish rather than, well, here's what we need to do and here's the price and here's what I'm getting paid and, you know, I'll call you when we're closing.
How do I help people get what they want?
Right. Right.
Who was it? Zig Ziglar said once, I think, if you help enough other people get what they want, you never have to worry about getting what you want. Is that it?
That's kind of how it works.
He was my hero, Zig Ziglar. Yeah. You know, when you think about your team, why do you think people stay on it? I mean, you got a pretty big team. What keeps them with your team?
They're busy.
Mm-hmm.
They're busy, yeah. And they know that they'll have the support if they need it. They know that, you know, they'll also have, they'll be pushed. I would tell you, we probably have told more people we don't want them on our team than we've taken on our team. I have people all the time calling and saying, you know, hey, we want to join, and no, you're not a fit.
But the people that are see progress.
Yes.
And progress equals happiness.
It does. It does.
When people are seeing progress, they're rarely disappointed.
Right.
Even if they're not exactly where they need to be, they're moving in that direction.
We're trying to keep everybody on a path that, okay, you're going to get there. Right? And here's the things you have to do to get there. They realize that we care. We're not, again, in the standard broker model, they'll sign you up, they throw you in behind a desk, and they say, knock yourself out.
Yeah.
You know, in this model, or in definitely the case of my team, I care about them.
Yeah.
I want them to be successful. Right. And if they're not successful, I tell them straight up, if you're not successful, I feel it's a reflection on me, not so much you. So
you're looking for people that have the drive to want to make $100,000, and then you care enough about them to make sure they do it.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to run through a brick wall?
Yeah.
Let's run through the brick wall. Nice. That's what it's about. If you're scared to run through the brick wall, you're not cut out for this.
Yeah. So in 5 years, let's look 5 years in advance. Mm-hmm. Where do you see your business having grown? What would you like to see in terms of your business expansion, whatever, in 5 years?
I think in 5 years, I would love to have, again, the Pocono team that we have. I would love to not have to do anything there.
Okay.
That I've got whatever, 2, 3, 5 people on the team.
Self-sufficient.
And they operate, and if people are calling me, I just say, listen, this person's taking the lead, and they've got the experience, the expertise to handle them the same way I would.
Okay.
Meanwhile, I can be outgrowing my business, you know, working with expansion.
Other avenues,
you know, as well as watching my investments, my other passive income. Commercial real estate is hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard. And sometimes you're banging your head against the wall, you know, for $20. I don't want to bang my head against the wall for $20. I'll bang my head against the wall for $200,000, but not $20. Mm-hmm. So I want to work on more of those things that I'm better suited to, and that, you know, make more money, but also discover other avenues that we're starting to look at now.
Yeah.
And, you know, in 5 years, those should be up and running. Mm-hmm. And I want to be doing less of the, you know, little things that my agents on the ground, hopefully in the Poconos, will take care of, and more of the national stuff.
So you've made the shift from sales to leadership.
Correct.
Completely.
Correct. And I'd love to be able to, listen, calling in once a week to coach you guys through what's going on, coach you through some deals, help you through this, help you through that. I'd rather help them get to where they're going and make a little slice of it, rather than try to tackle it and let them look at it, you know, and see me make the money. There's other places where I think I could be successful.
Yeah. Have you attended the Expansion Orientation Systems program?
I am next month.
Are you?
Oh, yes.
Oh, excellent.
It's in, September 20-something or other in, I think, Connecticut or Rhode Island.
Yeah, there's a lot. I don't know where
it is. That's the one I'm going to. There's one like next week in Hawaii, and I'm like, well.
We should go there.
Yeah.
But, we just have so much discussions about that in recent interviews about people who continue to think about that same direction, which is exciting stuff. So if there was one thing that you could leave our audience today with that could change their success in real estate and change their life based on that, what would it be? What's the advice from Dan?
I mean, I can only speak from the commercial side. You know, residentially, that's a whole different ball game. And, you know, part of me wishes there were two different licenses, one for residential, one for commercial. I've never sold a house, and not even my personal house I've ever sold. Because that's just not what I do. But I mean, in terms of commercial real estate and being more successful, I think what you got to do is you get the education and you get the experience, and you actually look and interview brokerage houses or wherever models you want to go and figure out what's the best fit for you. Because when you jump into it, it's hard. Mm-hmm. And you need a support mechanism somewhere, whether it's through training or someone that's going to mentor you or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do your homework. Don't just, you know, knock on the first door you see. Find out what every model is about, what they do, and then also research their standing in the community. Like, how are they thought of? Because when you hang that shingle on your card, you're going to be judged by that company or whatever it is. And so I think you want to get hooked up with the right support mechanism for your house, brokerage house, or firm. Yep. And then you want to get that as much education as you can, as quickly as you can, because that'll give you the confidence then to be able to, you know, do deals.
So learning based and who you're in business with matters.
Correct.
Yeah. Dan, it has been my pleasure to spend some time with you on the show today. It's been
mine
very eye-opening. Had a good time.
Been fun.
And I appreciate you spending time to be with us today.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And to our listeners, I want to invite all of you to come back and spend some time with us in future episodes of the Get Real Show. And on behalf of myself and Keystone Partners Group, I hope to see you again in the very near future.